Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
The US President Donald Trump, as you've been hearing, held a phone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin this afternoon, with Putin under growing pressure to accept a ceasefire deal in Ukraine. The US leader said land and power plants and dividing up certain assets were on the agenda for the phone call. This call is a second known time both leaders have spoken since January. And it's concluded in the last half hour or so. For some reaction, I'm joined by US author and commentator Mitch Feierstein and by Dr. Tobias Tyler, who's lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD. You're both very welcome indeed to the programme. Can I come to you, Mitch Feierstein, first of all? Following that phone call, Putin associate or spokesperson said Putin's international, he wrote... Under the leadership of President Putin, I should say, President Trump and Putin, the world has become a much safer place today. Historic, epic, he says. That was the tenor of the message put forward by the Kremlin. What is your reaction?
Well, look, we don't know what happened. And I think normalization between the two nuclear superpowers, I mean, I think Russia has more nuclear weapons than anybody on the planet. And I think the U.S. has just as many or slightly less. Normalization of relations is really an important thing. I'm optimistic. I'm very cautiously optimistic that they'll reach some kind of arrangement. We have no idea what they talked about, or we know that the call went probably close to 2 hours. And I think that there were a lot of items on the table for the two to discuss in normalization of these the relationship. That I think one of the key issues and one of the problems is there are over a million dead young soldiers, and maybe more on the Ukraine side, and the war has to stop and it has to be ended. So, you know, this is the important takeaway. And I think that the head of the United Nations came out, the Secretary General, this afternoon in support of these conversations going on between Putin and Trump to end the war.
What do you think the sticking points would have been in that conversation?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of sticking points in the conversation, because you've got to figure out exactly what the situation on the ground is. And if you listen to the propaganda coming from one side or propaganda coming from the other side, it's difficult to discern what the realities on the ground are. I mean, we've got a lot of different realities that people need to deal with. We've got economic realities. I mean, you've got statements from Ursula von der Leyen, who spoke at the Royal Danish Military Academy today, saying that she wants a new world order. Mm-hmm. Now, quite frankly, I'm also British, by the way. So quite frankly, nobody voted for Ursula and anybody in the European Union. Nobody voted for her to run the world. So, you know, quite frankly, I think this is about freedom.
Yeah, but she holds an important position within the European Union framework, and there were processes to appoint her there. So she is a person of significance in all of this. Can I put to you this?
Hold on. Wait. Let me answer that a bit. I want to respond to that because, yeah, she is. She heads 27 member states that have a combined GDP of $19 trillion. So, yeah, but that she was appointed in some opaque manner. So maybe she is important, but I didn't vote for it. I also didn't vote for the Digital Safety Act and the Online Safety Act in the United Kingdom that strips people of freedoms. And you guys in Ireland know a lot about that.
So let's not get sidetracked on those issues. In terms of what Putin would have been, I'll bring in Tobias on this one. And stay with me if you can, Fitch. When Vladimir Putin said beforehand that he wants certain guarantees in terms of, or certain conditions, or he raised certain questions as to Ukraine involvement in NATO and no European soldiers in Ukraine, who would monitor a deal if there was to be a deal? I mean, if you were to put those positions or points to Donald Trump in this phone call, how do you think Donald Trump would have responded?
Well, the NATO issue, Putin has essentially already won, because NATO has already made it clear that that Ukraine membership is off the table. So that's already a win for Putin, essentially. As regards the territorial division, I think it's fairly clear and widely understood that Russia will not make territorial concessions, at least not to any significant degree. And that leaves the third issue, which you have mentioned, is the Ukrainian peace, potentially who is going to monitor it. The Americans have made it clear that they don't want to put American soldiers on the ground. Mm-hmm. That leaves the Europeans. I think that's the one issue where Putin potentially might make certain concessions. That said, of course, the number of European troops on Ukrainian soil would have to be really vast to make a potential security difference in terms of protecting Ukraine from another Russian attack, which is unlikely to happen because Europeans aren't able and willing to do it. So I think Putin can make concessions eventually on that point without really losing a great deal in terms of the overall outcome.
Do you think it would have been adversarial, this phone call? Because Donald Trump has threatened that if there isn't a ceasefire, that he could impose sanctions that could hurt Russia a lot. But just before the phone call, Vladimir Putin went on television in Russia and railed against Western sanctions.
Yeah, so Trump has that ability to be both good cop and bad cop at the same time. And he kind of alternates between those two personas. Who knows what persona he adopted during the phone call? I think it's very likely that Putin would have, that Trump would essentially have told Putin rather the same that he talked a wider public, namely that, you know, if you are willing to be conciliatory, we are, you know, we do have all those Trump cards that we will pull out of the pocket for you. You know, we will deepen economic ties, we will try to end the sanctions and so on. But if you don't, we will tighten the sanctions. That said, of course, it's not really clear how the US could tighten sanctions against Russia much further, because there isn't much trade to begin with between the two. And Russia already, as we know, is already under very heavy sanctions. I think, Steve, what you're seeing at the moment now is really a positioning game. So those are not peace negotiations. Those are preliminary negotiations about a potential 30-day ceasefire, during which talks about the potential beginning of peace negotiations might take place. So at the moment, you really see both sides trying to stake their position. And then potentially you see, after, if that ceasefire comes into existence, which might happen, you then will see a more serious determination of each side's position.
Yeah, I wonder, is the US seen by Ukraine as an honest broker here, Mitch?
We finance them to a large extent. So what do you mean, are they seen as an honest broker? I mean,
so when Donald Trump says this phone call is about the division of certain assets, I mean,
I told, you know, as I went on, I think the important thing is you've got to consider the circumstances on the ground and who's winning and who's losing right now. So you're not in a position, if you're losing a war, to dictate the terms to somebody who has a clear advantage in the field right now. I mean, and you're going to continue the death and continue more throwing more troops at this. Mm-hmm. And the practicality, I'm not really sure what exactly the practicality of putting France, I mean, I think Starmer and Macron want to put boots on the ground there. First of all, I'm not sure that Russia would find that an acceptable situation, A. And B, I don't know that Britain has a number of, what do they have, 20,000 or 30,000 combat-ready troops? That's not enough to deploy, and I don't know what France's situation is.
But I also don't know how the peacekeepers, I think. Not aggressors.
Right, but it doesn't matter what they're seen as. They have to be approved by both participants.
Well, no, it does, because that would be on foot of any compromise deal. It would be
to guarantee and monitor a peace deal. Right. But before you interrupt me, let me finish my point. My point is that both parties have to agree to allow those troops to come in. Mm-hmm. And it could be seen as one party to be an occupation. So they will say, no, we don't approve of that. And then the only way that would ever happen, I mean, Italy's already said that it's ridiculous. The prime minister of Italy wants to have no part of that. So, you know, the bigger issue is, once you get those troops, if you don't have backing for all, you know, it's not going to be backed by NATO, because they don't have the votes to back sending a peacekeeping force in there. So, I mean, it's very hypothetical at this point, because every single member of NATO would have to approve that, and they don't have the votes.
What happens if there's no deal then? What happens if there's no deal?
I know,
that's very simple.
It's very simple. Then the war will go on, and I would bet that it will be finished before the summer. And I think that Ukraine will be turned into a landlocked rump state.
So, but the U.S. has promised to restart military aid to Ukraine.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't think there's any possibility that they have a chance of winning,
even with U.S. support.
What kind of support?
Well, the support that Donald Trump has guaranteed.
They've had our support for the past 3 years with every type of weapon that we've had, except nuclear weapons, and this war will not go nuclear.
So I'll bring in Tobias in just a second. But I mean, they've proved
that they haven't been able to defeat Russia on the battlefield.
But they've certainly defended.
And they've just lost Kursk in Russia, in Russian territory, and they're, you know, I don't know how many more troops they have left, because we're getting a really opaque picture as to what's happened, and I don't think Zelensky's being honest with what's happened. And I think, you know, I think that that's a gigantic problem, and I don't know where they're going to get new troops. Because I know, I happen to know that if you look at the numbers and the masses, I know that Russia probably has more troops than Ukraine does. So just on numbers alone, they're going to eventually lose. Period.
So let me ask Tobias to respond to that. It seems that Mitch is accepting, even with U.S. military support, that Ukraine is about to lose this war, or will lose this war, definitely if the war continues. They're in a weak position to negotiate, then, aren't they?
They're in a very weak position, and I think it's also important to point out that Trump is not wrong about everything, right? So Trump's main point is that during the Biden administration, even at the height of Western support for Ukraine, there was a determination not to let Ukraine lose outright, but there was also a high reluctance to give Ukraine the tools that it would have needed to actually win, essentially because Putin's nuclear threats were very effective. Putin threatened the use of nuclear weapons if Russia were to be pushed out of the territories which it had conquered in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. That meant that, and I think Trump is correct about that, that meant that there was really no prospect for Ukraine, because Ukraine was involved in this essentially very grinding, very brutal, very cruel war of attrition, which eventually it was going to lose. So Trump's argument is, well, let's get over that and let's try something else. Let's accept the fact that Ukraine has lost significant territories. Let's also accept the fact that Ukraine won't be allowed to join NATO, but at least let's end the war. I think that's not a wrong position. I think that position makes sense within the limit of what is realistically achievable. The problem is, what's going to happen once there is a peace settlement? Who is going to guarantee that that Russia won't just regroup and then take another bite out of Ukraine 20 years from now? Russia will presumably give territorial guarantees to Ukraine, but it has done that twice before. It has done it with the Budapest Declaration in 1994, and also later in a territorial border treaty mm-hmm. with Ukraine, and it has violated it both times. So if there are no foreign troops on Ukrainian soil, call them peacekeepers, call them peace monitors, whatever they're to be called, you know, who is going to give Ukraine any kind of guarantee? And I think that's really going to be the tricky issue during the negotiations.
And that's one question I put to you finally, really briefly, Mitch. If Vladimir Putin and Russia is to gain territory here this time, what would stop him from trying again in a year or two's time to invade more of Ukraine or another Eastern European country?
I think that's a ridiculous, you know, hypothesis. I would strongly disagree with that. I think they have no interest in doing that, A. And B, I think that if you look at Angela Merkel's statements about the Minsk Accords, that they basically, when she came out in the paper in Germany, and the gist of that article was, we never meant that you would have Donbass and Lugansk. What we wanted to do is rearm Ukraine. So, I mean, you have one agreement that the Europeans came up with in 2014 when there was that coup of the government in Ukraine. So why would Russia trust the West again is a big point that people need to consider. And we need to think about that. But nobody wants in the media wants to talk about that or give that any airtime.
Okay.
However, so what's the prospect or percentage bet that you would make that Russia does something to go into Europe? I would say that it's less than 1%.
Okay. It's very insightful to hear your perspective, I must say. Mitch Feierstein, author and commentator, thank you very much indeed. And also thank you for your expertise, Dr. Tobias Tyler, lecturer in the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD.